Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
99 years, you know, it sounds like a long time. It sounds like it's, you know, just this very long length of time. But when you think about the course of U.S. history, the course of world history, it's just a reminder of how young our country truly is. Here we are, the 99th annual Veterans Day ceremony taking place here in a couple hours here in Missoula at the Missoula County Courthouse, the Doughboy statue. But right now, we've got the microphones open here on this Veterans Day at Hellgate Post number 27 here in Missoula at the American Legion. Our friend Susan Renault, thanks for helping to make all this happen, and thanks for
all you do.
Thanks for all you do. Every Veterans Day, 9/11, you make Memorial Day.
Flag Day.
You just make sure Americans never forget. Yeah, it's so great. So great
I love
to see
it.
You. Yeah, thanks for this idea and everything.
Well, I had nothing to do with creating Veterans Day or any of the other days. Our veterans are the reason that we have these days. We have our country because of the men and women, mostly men, that stepped up to the plate in 1775 and put their lives on the line. Many of them were my relatives. And I am so grateful to those people who are the heroes in this story of our country. And as you know, my father was a Marine and was in World War II, Korea and Vietnam. And my husband was a Vietnam veteran. And most of the veterans, as you know, from just trying to get people to come on your radio show today, are very shy. Veterans do not like to brag. They don't like to. They do their thing, and they volunteer or they are drafted, in the case of the Vietnam veterans. But they don't like to brag. And you have two heroes right now that you're going to talk to who are willing to speak, but most are not.
Well, I'll tell you what, I've enjoyed catching up with so many of these veterans here today. I had a couple of great Vietnam veterans, and we were just smoking and joking, you know, figuratively. But
I know. But
telling their stories, sharing their stories, and it's a gathering of friends. It's a gathering of brothers. Gathering of brothers and sisters.
We do the November 11th service every year. It's been going on at the Doughboy statue at the Missoula Courthouse on the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month all over the country. And it's very cool because it is absolutely at the same time. And we do that to commemorate all honorably discharged veterans that served our country since the beginning of our country.
No matter what you did.
No matter what you did.
You stepped up to serve. You were willing to put your life on the line. That's what matters.
And it doesn't matter if you were in combat.
That's right.
And I get that from veterans when they say, well, you know, I wasn't in a war, but that doesn't matter.
This is a day for all who have served. All right, quick break here on Montana Talks. We'll talk with some of our great veterans right after this.
Big topics. Big ideas. Big sky. Montana Talks.
All right. Well, jumping right into it here, we've got the commander of American Legion Post number 27 here in Missoula, Commander Jim Miyake. And now, Jim, did I pronounce that right there? Did I get that right?
You did a good job.
I did. Okay, so I was joking with you earlier. I said, pronounce your name for me. I said, okay, I'm going to call you Mr. Miyagi. Mr. Miyake. That's the only way I can remember how to pronounce your name. But you probably got called a few different names during your time in the Navy, huh?
Oh, plenty, believe me. I'm of Polish descent, so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Polack jokes were a big deal when I was in Vietnam.
Oh, yeah. Well, I bet, and it wasn't just because you were Polish. They probably made fun of everybody, right?
Oh, everybody had a nickname. Everybody had something that, other than their real name, we called them.
Yeah. Yeah, you were a Navy signalman and a Vietnam veteran. First off, welcome home, and thank you to all of our great Vietnam veterans out there. Yeah, and then here you are. You're helping to make breakfast. You're doing the dishes. Your wife has got you running and gunning today.
She's a taskmaster, but we... I've been a member of the Legion for a long time, but I finally just decided to get involved. I'm retired. I'm not doing anything. And once you get into it, it's hard to get out of. There's always something to do for the veterans, always. And we deal pretty close with the Valor House and the guys downtown, VFW. I'm friends with them, and most of them are my members, and I'm a member of their organization. So it intertwined. It's all aimed at veterans, helping veterans, and explaining to veterans that there's a lot of us out there. We're a big voice if we all talk at the same time.
Yeah.
But everybody, like Susan said, we're shy and we don't want to talk about our experiences. But we need to. We need to, or we're going to repeat the mistakes.
Well, and that's why it's fun getting multiple folks on the microphone, too, because then it becomes less about you and more about just smoking and joking with the other folks at the table, which is why these breakfasts are so important. What's just this morning alone been like? I know you've been kind of busy, but what is having this Veterans Day breakfast like and knowing that other gatherings are taking place all across Montana?
It makes my heart feel good to know that everything is happening today. Our normal breakfast is the third Monday of the month, but they have the ceremony at the Doughboy, so we opted to have breakfast on Veterans Day so we can get everybody fed and then to the Doughboy, and it works really well.
Yeah.
We have a big crowd, and everybody's happy when they leave.
Susan talked about, Veterans Day and how, the 11th day of the 11th month, at the 11 o'clock hour, and similar ceremonies taking place at the same time all over the place. Talk about the significance of Veterans Day, or what your message is to folks all across Montana about the significance of Veterans Day.
Well, the thing about Veterans Day is it's all veterans. Memorial Day is for the ones that didn't make it back, but Veterans Day is for anyone that served. And it's important to me to recognize citizen soldiers is what it amounts to. People that left the homes and the farms and the businesses and served their country. And that's important to me, and I think it should be more important to the country than it is.
Well, and when we talk about peace through strength, the strength of the American military is every single soldier, sailor, airman, Marine, Coast Guard, you name it, no matter what their job is, whether you're a pilot or whether you're a janitor, right? Every single job matters all the way up and down that chain, and that is the peace through strength.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the ability for average citizens to... you don't need a huge standing army if you have a populace that is willing to defend the country. And that's what we have.
Well, we also have here with us, I don't know if he's your oldest veteran here at the breakfast today or not, certainly one of the most ready-to-fight guys, looks like it. Oh, here we got Don.
Middleweight.
You boxed middleweight. Okay, well, see, I can tell you were a fighter.
The first year... I went in the military in 1951. I was a middleweight. Now I'm a lightweight.
You're what, 94 years old now? Korean War veteran. Thanks for your service, and what an honor to see you.
Well, thank you. This is interesting. That gal gave a good talk here.
We'll make it happen. No, she is the Susan? she's the wife of a veteran.
Oh,
her. Her dad served in World War II, Korea, and Vietnam. So,
oh my gosh.
There's no stopping her, right?
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Well, so what's Veterans Day like for you? 94 years young still.
Say again?
What's Veterans Day like for you?
Well, I grew up when the war started. All we had was radio. That was in 1941. And I was 10 or 11 years old. And any time the Japs or Germans would raise hell with us, we'd have our ear to the radio, AM radio. And I had four uncles and 10 cousins in the military. And they had a serious manpower shortage. And we kids all learned how to drive. We lived out in the woods in Connecticut. And it's a nice place, a little lake, a creek in our backyard. But anyway, I did all of my hunting, fishing, and trapping within a mile of our house.
Wow.
But anyway, I worked on the farms like a lot of kids did. Some of the women, 14-year-old gals, would be working on the farms, baling hay and stuff like that.
So you knew this land, you knew this country, and how much it meant to you. Hold that thought. We got to take a quick break here. We're going to talk more with this great Korean War veteran here right after this. Stand by.
Montana Talks, uniting the Treasure State, one conversation at a time. Here's your host, Aaron Flint.
Man, I tell you what, you were probably glued to your radio as you were listening to our 94-year-old Korean War veteran here, Don McNack. Don is busy serenading the ladies here at the Veterans Day breakfast. Don, we got a show to do here, brother. No, I'm joking.
My daughter was in the Coast Guard.
Okay. Well, Don, yeah, great to see us. So fun talking with fellow veterans here. This young lady is going to join us here in just a few minutes. She launched, this is really cool. She was telling me during the break here, she launched F-18s off of air carriers.
Oh, okay.
What an incredible job that is, huh?
What a job.
So Don, you were telling us about growing up in Connecticut. You see, we in Montana, we think of places like Connecticut just being, you know, just concrete jungles. But no, it was like, you know, outdoors, hunting and fishing back in the day. You were talking about being glued to the radio.
I had a trap line that went 3 miles through the woods, and I followed a creek and a couple of lakes. And we have a problem here in Montana. Californians flock in, people from Chicago. In Connecticut, the New Yorkers discovered Connecticut, so it's not the same.
So one of my favorite guys when I was in Ramadi, Iraq, back in 05-06, he was a logger, and he just had this great accent in Vermont, and he'd just carry around a shotgun, you know, just one handed, he'd just carry the shotgun around, but. You know, I'd get to talk to him about Vermont because, you know, Vermont was a little different politically from Montana, you know, 20 years ago. And he'd say, the Flatlanders moved in and changed it all. So he would always complain about the Flatlanders that moved into Vermont and changed it.
People from New Jersey and New York and Florida flocked into New England, Vermont, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Rhode Island. So it isn't the same now.
So take us back to that radio that you were glued to, that AM radio, and you're hearing all these reports coming in. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming that's what inspired you to eventually join the military yourself.
Oh, yeah. Well, when I was about 15, I was ready to join the Marines or Army, but I had two uncles. One was in the Marines and one was in the Army. And they said, Don, why don't you join the Air Force or Coast Guard? Maybe you could get a trade out of it, and you won't get your butt shut off. So in 1951, I joined the Air Force and ended up in Wichita Falls, Texas, for training on heavy bombers, aircraft and engine school. 1 year there, and then up to Spokane, Washington. We had a heavy bomber base that flew B-36s, 10-engine bombers all over the world. And it carried two nuclear bombs and 21 ton apiece. And it scared hell out of the Red Chinese. And the airplane was so big and powerful, they called it the Peacemaker, and that it was. We never had a drop of bomb. Carried two big 21-ton hydrogen bombs. And it just kept the enemy at bay.
Kept it at peace.
And we flew them 24 hours a day out of Spokane, Guam. I ended up in Guam for a while. We flew out of Guam.
So, did you watch this recent the bomber strikes on the Iranian nuclear sites? I'll bet it was interesting for you to watch that your past experience.
Yeah. But that was quite an airplane. It was called the B-36, made by Convair.
You know, it's crazy to think that you're 94 years old. You certainly don't look it. I mean, I can see the look in your eye. It's like you're still there, right?
I
mean, when you remember it. But, I mean, you're still, like, you remember it so vividly like it was yesterday. That's what I mean by that, I guess. 94 years old. This Veterans Day has only been going on this for 99 years, I mean, which is a long time. But it's also, it's a reminder how young our country still is.
That's right.
What do you want to tell folks across Montana, if you could, at 94 years young, if you could tell folks anywhere across Montana something about Veterans Day, what would you tell them?
Well, I'd say that any able-bodied man or woman should think of joining the military. If all else fails, they can't get a good job or they're just stuck, join the military and it would change their whole lifestyle. And to be patriotic is one thing, but we have a lot of people in this country that don't appreciate our country and our liberty, and they're raising hell all the time, protesting about this and that and the other. I'd like to hit them over the head with a 2x4 is what I'd like to do.
But you restrain yourself.
Yeah.
But it does make you wonder if more people had served and sacrificed and understood what it takes to build a country, it might just change some perspectives. Well, Don, it's been great to see you. Thanks for your service, and thanks for joining us here on the show.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's been a pleasure.
It's been a pleasure seeing you as well. Next up, my longtime friend Larry Anderson here, great guy, U.S. Army Vietnam veteran, right. And eventually you also had served as a Missoula County Commissioner back in the day as well. So good to see you, Larry.
Yeah, that's all ancient history now.
It is crazy how long ago that was. You know, earlier I ran into Colonel Gary Schwartz.
Right.
He's the MC for the Veterans Day ceremony here today. His wife, Holly, it was so great. She came up when I was deployed. His wife, Holly, would call my wife to check in with her while I was deployed overseas.
Well, isn't that something?
Wow.
It's a small world.
Isn't that incredible?
One of those Montana small world connections.
Right. Yeah, and because I didn't even know Gary. I mean, and his wife comes up, I called your wife on the phone. And that's so important because so often the families get forgotten.
Yeah, that's for sure. When I went in, I had chased my girlfriend all around the University of Montana campus, and I was a forestry student, and so I would go up to Lubbock Forest and spend spring quarter when she wanted to go on dates, and so but I was persistent, and finally in 1968, I proposed to her, and we got married, and then we were married for 6 weeks before I got deployed to Vietnam for a year. So that was one of those things that you don't know what the future's going to be like. Luckily, I came back in one piece, so that was good, and we've been married now for 56 years, so we're still going strong.
I should have paid better attention to the Old Testament of the Bible, because Jessica and I, and of course my wife Jessica, and you used to work together
for Congressman
Denny Reber right here in the Missoula field office back in the day. But we got married, and I think about a month later is when I deployed for Afghanistan. And then a few years later, I was in a men's Bible study, and there was this Bible verse about, hey, after you get married, don't go to war for the first year after you get married. It's like, oh, whoops, messed up on that one.
We didn't read it close enough, did we? But there's always a fine print.
It's like, oh, I guess I probably should have read that before I went. So, you know, I was talking with some of the great Vietnam veterans earlier and how us post 9/11 Iraq and Afghanistan veterans, we owe so much to you Vietnam veterans, many of whom were just so horrifically mistreated. But the reason why we've had it so good and so well, and why veterans are appreciated in this country is because of the Vietnam veterans who made sure that that would never happen to our veterans ever again.
It was kind of okay, yeah, I think one of the biggest change agents for us here in Missoula was the Vietnam Veterans Memorial. I was fortunate enough to be part of that committee. And when we asked the park department to for a spot to put the monument up, we had to go get approval from the city council. And those meetings were just horrendous. We had to have police in there because people, 20 years later, were still very passionate about their view of the war. And but I think out of that came the idea of separating the veteran from the politics of war. And I think that kind of started to change. So that was one of the great accomplishments I think that we were able to achieve out of that effort, was to separate the...
you can disagree with the war or not.
Right.
But you can still support the troops in the meantime. Yeah,
yeah,
that's right. Well, and the other theme about Veterans Day is what we constantly see is those who've served continue to serve. And I know you're still continuing to serve your fellow veterans and looking at different... you know, different ways to help with whether it's post-traumatic stress disorder or traumatic brain injury and things like that. So with about a minute and a half or so before our next break, and then we've got some other great guests here as well, tell us a little bit about what you're doing on that front.
We did get a piece of legislation passed called House Bill 832, and we're going through a competitive process now to hopefully be the... contractor for training 100 clinicians throughout the state of Montana to administer our RTM protocol, which is a treatment for PTSD. It doesn't use medication. It's very fast acting. You can, in 3 to 5 sessions with a trained clinician, you can remove the emotions from the events that cause that PTSD, and that is just amazing. And so we're going through the process, and we hope to be selected for that. We're working with a group called the RTM Protocol, and we hope to, as soon as we get word that we're selected, hopefully we will be.
And if people want to hear more about that, I forget, is there a website or a phone number that they can
call? Yeah, it's called... it's all one word, therTMprotocol.com.
Perfect. TherTMprotocol.com.
Right.
All right. Well, Larry Anderson, great to see you as always.
Good to see you.
Welcome home. Thanks for your service and to all our Vietnam veterans.
Well, thank you for
listening to the show.
Keeping on the airwaves. Yeah. We sure appreciate it.
It's a great time. Thank you.
This is where Montana talks at with Lane Nordlund.
On Friday, President Trump made 2 posts on Truth Social addressing concerns about the beef packing industry. In the first post, he called on the Department of Justice to investigate major meat packing companies, or the Big Four, as they are called, for alleged collusion, price fixing, and price manipulation that he said hurt American ranchers and consumers. In the second post, the president noted that while cattle prices had fallen, box beef prices had risen, calling the situation fishy and warning that if wrongdoing was found, those responsible would pay a steep price. The Department of Justice also made a social media post saying they were following through with the president's directive to look into the meat packers. This is a developing story we will continue to track. In other news, the Fertilizer Institute has praised the U.S. Geological Survey for adding phosphate and potash to the final list of critical minerals, a list revised every 3 years to identify materials vital to the U.S. economy and national security. The group said the recognition will benefit American farmers, strengthen food security, and reduce supply chain risks, as these key fertilizer ingredients are largely controlled by a few nations. The group emphasized that food security equals national security. Currently, China and Russia produce 53% of global phosphate, while China, Russia, and Belarus supply more than 67% of potash. I'm Lane Nordlund.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Hey, a couple quick notes to put out there real fast. Earlier this morning, I caught up with a couple of great organizations, High Flight Heroes. That's one organization. In fact, a Montana guy is one of their ambassadors. Jimmy Bancroft lives in Winston, south of Helena, so he's an ambassador for High Flight Heroes. Sounds like a really cool organization. Basically, they do backcountry snowmobiling trips with veterans, which just sounds incredible, especially looking at some of the photos here. And then I also got a chance to catch up with a gentleman by the name of Michael Carmichael. He is a retired chief warrant officer for. He was in the 5th Special Forces Group. In fact, he's at his dad's house in Helena right now. Go to checkavet.org, checkavet.org. Incredible conversation with him talking about preventing veteran suicide. But also, they've got a big event going on tonight. I think a concert, a Veterans Day concert, and more that's taking place at the Missouri Brewing Company out there near Helena. So check that out. Get a hold of checkavet.org if you want to find out info on that concert tonight. Or go check out the full conversation on the Montana Talks podcast. And I got to give a big thank you to my friend Johnny C., retired Command Sergeant Major Johnny Christensen, because he called me up last week and said, "Hey, Aaron, you got to talk with these two guys." And it was so great catching up with both of them. So many great guests here at Hellgate Post number 27, American Legion here in Missoula, Montana. Our next guest, not only is she here with us, but she's got her really cool service dog with us as well. Heather Schweitz, great to see you. Yeah, thanks.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Thanks for coming down. So cool to see you here.
Came here for the great coffee and the great company.
How's the coffee and the company been so
far? Amazing. Amazing. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
Isn't it just fun just, well, don't thank me. I'm just here enjoying it like everybody else. But isn't it just amazing the random people that you get to meet at events like this?
It's so nice to rub elbows with fellow vets. You know, from old to young, it's a pleasure.
So you served in the U.S. Navy, and definitely I can't wait to hear more about your service, but you've got your service dog here with you as well. Tell us about your service dog.
That's Griffin, and once he puts the vest on, he knows he's working, and he's a great dog for PTSD, and he's pretty much everybody's service dog. Everybody loves him.
Yeah, it's the hardest thing, I think, for a lot of people is they don't want you to pet the service dog because they're a service dog for a reason. But everybody, I want to pet that dog.
Yeah.
Especially that one. It's got just these beautiful blue eyes.
And he loves to be pet. He's sad. I let everyone pet him.
Oh, yeah.
He brings everybody joy.
How did you get him? Are you connected with a program that helps with service dogs?
Service dog, I think it's serviceanimals.org. And you just have to, you know, fill out the paperwork and submit what is asked for, and you know, he has to pass a little test, and easy.
Very cool. So you had a really cool job in the U.S. Navy. You were launching F-18s off of air carriers. What was that job like?
Oh, it was amazing. I started on the USS George Washington and finished my tour on the USS Ronald Reagan, and it was really neat because when we were in the Gulf, we'd launch them off the carrier, and the P-3 Orions would go, and they're like more reconnaissance. They would scope out where the terror cells are, and then the F-18s, we'd launch them off, and they'd go bomb the heck out of them. And it's really nice because, you know, you do all these efforts on the ground where you're doing. I was also an airframer, so you're always maintaining the aircraft, and the pilots would come back and tell us they were successful in what they did, so we felt like we were all part of the mission.
And you were, yeah. Well, and it's so cool hearing that. So a couple of years ago, I got a chance to be, there was like two media seats to fly with the Blue Angels. So I got to backseat an F-18, which was incredible just in its own right. But the other thing I really loved about it is, so like when I was on the ground with the Army in Ramadi, Iraq, 05-06, we actually had a Top Gun flight instructor who was our Anglico team leader, who's like the guy who's on the ground but can talk to the aircraft overhead. And so he would talk to the F-18 pilots overhead so that he could tell them what we were seeing on the ground. They could tell them what they were seeing up above for air support. And it was so cool. But then it was fun to actually get in the back seat of an airframe like that. And then, you know, Army guys, we think, oh, those people flying around, they're just, you know, it's like an airline pilot. They're drinking their coffee. Oh, today on the flight deck, it says 59 degrees with it. No, like, holy cow, it is intense sitting in that thing. I mean, I was, you know, doing everything I could just to survive the flight without yakking in the first 30 minutes, let alone, you know, flying the thing and then trying to look down at cameras mm-hmm. to see what the soldier on the ground was seeing.
Yeah, right. My first tour, I was shore duty, so stationed in Lemoore, California. It's a fleet replacement squadron, so we train pilots to replace pilots in the fleet. And I had a bachelor's degree before I enlisted, and my commander saw that I was excelling, and he invited me to take a course to get my backseat qualification. So I also was able to fly backseat, and it was a two-hour mission, training mission, and I was done after 5 minutes. I couldn't wait. It was intense.
Yeah. Did you get to wear a G-suit, though?
I did.
That helps
yep.
a little bit, as
yes.
I understand
oh, yeah.
it, right? A little bit.
Right.
Probably doesn't cover everything.
But it was an incredible experience.
Yeah. Well, keep the headset on because we want to chat more with you. Plus, we got some other great guests here with us as well. Bill Barrow, and a fellow Army veteran here. Our friend Susan Renault pointed over at the breakfast table and said, you got to talk to Bill. He's great. So, Bill, thanks for coming over. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
Yeah. Well, tell us about Veterans Day. Why do you come? Why do you come to a Veterans Day breakfast like this?
Basically, Heather invited us. Just getting out with the other veterans. You know, no matter what branch of service that we've served in, we're all one group. We may pick on each other, but, you know, we're a big family. And it's just good to come to something like this and just enjoy each other's company and listen to some of the stories.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what's fun, because as Susan was talking about earlier, none of these veterans ever really want to talk about themselves, right?
No.
But once you get to talking in a group, you just start telling stories and talking about the friends that you got to know along the way. And it's just a really good time.
It is. It really is.
But then can be healing for a lot of people as well.
Yeah.
So tell us what you did in the Army.
I was a heavy engineer mechanic. I spent 21 years in. I was stationed a total of 8 years in Europe, a year in Korea. I was also deployed to Somalia. Left there approximately 10 days before they shot the Black Hawks down. And then a year later, I was down at one of the first ones that went into Haiti when we removed the military after they ran the government out.
Wow. What was it, if you're willing to share, what was it like being in Somalia, especially around that Black Hawk down time frame?
When we first got into Somalia, there was guys in the other unit that I had crossed paths with, been stationed with prior to, and they said, biggest worry is they're throwing rocks. And as soon as they left, the rocks went to lead. The bad thing about the Somalians over there is we knew when they were going to attack our base. We were hit every Sunday night, and we were hit every Wednesday night. And then they'd rotate around to the other bases. I was over there when the command detonator mine went off that took out the MP, where there are four MPs. That happened about half a mile from our base. And then there was a deuce-and-a-half truck that was taken out with a command detonated mine, and that was one of my trucks. So, yeah, it got a little nasty, and it just continued to get worse.
Yeah, yeah. You know, as you talk, I'm thinking, too, we got so many great listeners all across the state right now. There's a gentleman goes by the name Lightbrows in Hardin, Montana, who's listening to the show right now. And he was he's a Green Beret veteran
okay.
who served back during that time frame as well. So who knows? You guys probably ran across each other.
It could have been because our engineer unit is the one that built the compound for the Delta Force when they were coming in.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, it's a... The capabilities that you guys have, too, on the heavy equipment side.
Right.
I mean, I got to see our Montana Red Horse engineers on the Air Force side over in Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. Holy cow, those guys could build anything. I mean, they were building airstrips, and then
right.
the heavy equipment Army guys, I mean, you guys were building outposts for us all over okay. the place.
I was with the CSE unit, which was the combat service equipment. We big dozers, bucket loaders, asphalt machines, concrete carpenters, plumbers, we basically did it all.
And did it under fire.
Did it under fire.
In any circumstances at the same time. Let's see. We've got to take another quick break here on Montana Talks. We've got another Navy veteran in the house here as well. We'll catch up with her right after the break. And but to our other veterans who are here, keep the headsets on if you want, and feel free to jump in on the conversation at any point. Back to Heather Schweitz, 30 seconds before the break. What do you want to tell folks all across Montana about Veterans Day?
It's such a blessing to be honored. It's actually our honor to have been able to serve. I think everybody should take an interest in serving their country. And that was my service dog saying hi.
That's the camera. That's the camera, yeah.
He had my back.
That's right.
That was a gun. Yeah. Just being able to have served, it was an honor. And you get more out of it. You make friends for life, and the experience has really matured me as well.
Yeah, there was a photojournalist with a camera, and he's like, all right, press, stay away, stay away, press.
He had my back.
All right, back after this.
It started with one.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, the ladies are taking over the show now. Big thanks to Bill Barrow over there for joining us on the program. And now the ladies are taking over the microphones. We were going to say goodbye to Heather Schweitzer, but we got to get her on for one more quick story, because we were talking during the breaks about, I got a chance to tour the USS Nimitz aircraft carrier, and I was like, this is really cool. But I'm like, I do not want to be stuck on one of these things, because they're pretty crowded, right? And so you were telling me how being on an aircraft carrier is the best of times and the worst of times.
Absolutely.
So what was one of the worst of times, or the hardest of times, maybe?
You know, now that I reflect on it, it is probably one of the best times as well. We were in high seas in the Gulf, and when you have a jet and you're assigned to it, you have to stand at parade rest and put all the chains down on it next to the other jets with the other shipmates. And we hear the sirens go off, so we have to get on all fours and hold on to a pad eye. Those are the loops on the carrier where the chains get hooked into. And the high seas, there's waves coming over, you're holding on for your dear life. I swear I thought I was going to fall into the drink, but reflecting back, it was very intense, and I realized, you know, how dangerous it is up there.
Yeah, but that is a testament to the dedication that it takes all the way up and down that chain to that one airframe and the crew that's on it and everybody that it takes to support it.
And we're responsible for that jet, you know, so we weren't even allowed to abandon it and go under the flight deck. But
And think about how many Americans, young people, are standing at parade rest right now doing that very thing.
Yes. Yeah. Amen.
All over the world. Remarkable. Again, thanks for sticking around. Let's also bring on Rebecca, another Navy veteran. She was an operations specialist and worked on the, what did you call it again? Sub-support, in support of the submarines.
So I was stationed on the USS Dixon, sub-tender out of San Diego.
That's what I was thinking of. Okay, yeah.
Yes.
So you and I were talking about, you know, as much as I didn't want to be stuck on an aircraft carrier, I really wouldn't want to be stuck on a submarine. That's incredible work. But you and I both got to meet the USS Montana crew just a couple of months ago when they were here in Missoula. So talk about what it was like for you being a sub-tender and an operations specialist.
So, you know, when I first enlisted, I didn't know much about Navy ships. And when you go to boot camp, you know, it isn't until the end when you figure out where you're going to be assigned. And so seeing this massive ship, not as big as a sub-tender or not as big as a carrier, but it's still a bit overwhelming. Being an operations specialist was really, I thought, a great job. You got to know before anyone else where you were going when we were deployed. And, you know, I think meeting submariners, like the individuals on the USS Montana, it was cool to share, like, well, you know, this is how it was when, you know, when I served in our base. And although I didn't go under underway with on a submarine, you know, being able to tour. It's pretty amazing. But, you know, putting themselves, you know, every time they go underway, it's very, it's, it could be life or death, actually.
Yeah.
So it's pretty
Everything
intense.
Everything matters. The so, oxygen, the water supply, much less potential fires and everything. In fact, they were telling me you don't even use the word fire.
Mm-mm.
Like, it's a word you don't use. There's another word they use if it's actually happening.
Right.
That's the other thing when you talk with fellow veterans is no matter what that veteran did, they always know somebody else who did what they believe is more or sacrificed more or whatever. But in reality, every single person who steps up and has that flag on their shoulder is sacrificing and is serving and is a part of the peace through strength, because it takes everybody up and down the chain.
Yes.
Well, it's great to see you. I think Susan was going to come join us to give a plug for today's ceremonies, but of course she's busy back there rounding up everybody for breakfast. What do you want to tell folks across Montana about Veterans Day or anything else, frankly?
I would say ditto to what Heather had mentioned, but as being a part of Post 27, being one of the executive committee, and just seeing all the people that showed up today for this breakfast, we're guesstimating 80 people came out, you know, family members attending, just, you know, showing support, I think is huge. And, you know, another layer to serving is coming back to either your hometown or your adopted hometown, and giving back to other veterans is really, it's very rewarding. And there's so many opportunities in the state of Montana, in Missoula, and that fills my cup. So
that's great to hear. And it sounds like veteran service organizations have come a long way in terms of better integrating female veterans as well into organizations, and probably as a testament to the women leaders that are stepping up into these organizations. Well, Rebecca, great to see you. Susan Campbell-Renaud, we've only got about 30 seconds to go. Go ahead. What do you want to tell folks about the ceremony?
I want people to come to the ceremony, which is very shortly. It's going to be today, November 11th at 11 a.m. on the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month. This is November 11th. They will be at the Missoula Courthouse. All across the country, which gives me chills, veterans like this beautiful woman next to me are going to be honored, living and dead, since the Revolutionary War of our founding of our country. And I want people to come out in droves to honor our veterans.
Yep. So if you're here in Missoula, Missoula County Courthouse today at 11, or if you're listening
anywhere
elsewhere across Montana, find a local event in your community. You still got an hour to find it and get there.
Find it.